You're listening to the Tatum Chronicles. This is Chapter 3. If you enjoy, you can find the hard copy at www.chiptatum.com. Visit our store. On March 5, 1985, Major Rodriguez called and advised me that he and three others needed to spend 2 days visiting several local villages and some of the North Contra camps. I called Colonel Zychek, she's the hospital commander, and received authorization to fly 2 days of recon missions mapping villages which were not on our maps. The following passengers arrived with Major Rodriguez. General Gustavo Alvarez. He was the Honduran Army Chief of Staff, but in this time he had already retired. He usually flew under the name of Dr. Gus. After leaving active duty, General Alvarez became a consultant for the Pentagon and the CIA. Unfortunately, his demise came 25th of January, 1989, by what was dubbed left-wing guerrillas. An active duty Honduran colonel accompanied General Alvarez. Amir Amir, a Mossad agent, advisor to Vice President Bush, and a CIA asset. We flew into 6 villages, the villages are listed on the flight plan, and picked up soldiers and took them to El Paraiso. We flew about 7 sorties. When we returned to base, maintenance and weather hampered our efforts to fly the following day. Those missions would be flown on the 7th of March. On the 7th of March, 1985, missions did continue for several villages to Contra camps. Major Rodriguez was utilized as an interpreter to provide instructions. 2 of the camps in Nicaragua were under fire by Sandinistas. Our intelligence indicated that there was no problem. We flew 4 sorties into the camps under heavy fire. At El Paraiso, we picked up 4 large white coolers. I asked Rodriguez, evidence? He responded, patting the coolers with his hands. You catch on fast, Tatum. We dropped Rodriguez and the coolers off at San Lorenzo and returned to base. I went to operations. I noted the cargo on the reverse side of the flight plan, which can be seen in the hard copy of the Tatum Chronicles. On 13 March 1985, at 3 a.m., I was called by J2, which is our Joint Task Force Bravo Intelligence Arm, and the MIL Group, which is the CIA, from the embassy in Tegucigalpa. There was an immediate need for medevac into Nicaragua. Apparently, Soviet-built Hind helicopters had attacked several Contra camps along the border. I was asked to fly into Nicaragua and find the home base for the Hinds so that the Contras could counterattack. We arrived at Ojo de Agua at 1720Z. Major Rodriguez advised us that Ocotal is the most probable base for the Hinds. Ocotal is a large military base for the Sandinistas Nicaraguans in Nicaragua. Flying low level with only the main rotors above the trees, we approached Ocotal. Before departing the area of the airfield, we were able to count 8 Hind-D Soviet gunships. The aircraft alerted to our presence and launched. Now here I have to ask, I really have to ask, why would we be sent there, especially after the incident with the negative pitch of the main rotor blade? A medevac Huey helicopter, unarmed, flying against 8 Hind-D Soviet attack helicopters. Think there was an ulterior motive there? I certainly do. Fortunately, we evaded them and completed our mission, moving medical personnel and supplies from the damaged camps. On the 15th of March 1985, I was called to a meeting at the U.S. Embassy in Tegucigalpa. This was due to a patient with a head injury. I was unable to meet on time. Night flight was prohibited in the country. It required a life-death situation. Mr. Hibbert, the pilot in charge of the other medevac aircraft, arrived late in the evening with the patient. The hospital at Joint Task Force Bravo was unable to provide neurocare. They arranged for a neurosurgeon to fly into Tegucigalpa that night. I took the place of Hibbert's co-pilot and flew the night mission to the capital city with Ron. As we approached Tegucigalpa, the lights into the city were turned off. This was an indicator to us that word of our night flight was not passed on to the Honduran military as expected. When we saw the blackout of Tegucigalpa, I dropped the aircraft to a night low-level flight and turned off all our position lights. We continued toward the city at about 60 knots. Our low-level recon revealed that we were just southeast of the airport. Having flown into the airport on many occasions, I was aware of the anti-aircraft artillery locations around the airport. One clear area was the main terminal. We repositioned over the city to the north of the air terminal, entered over the main terminal, then dropped to ground level, and flew about 1 foot above the runway to the U.S. military area. As we shut down the aircraft, Honduran military jeeps arrived with 50 cals pointing at us. The ambulance and a car from the U.S. Embassy were held back until ex-General Alvarez arrived to take the prisoners. That would be us. When he arrived, he asked another officer how a helicopter could breach the perimeter of the airport and the main military base. We were still sitting inside the helicopter with our flight helmets on. When we were ordered out, I took off my helmet and saluted the general. I pointed to the child who had been hit by the U.S. military truck earlier in the day. An ambulance arrived, and we transferred the patient. The general released us and accompanied us to the embassy. When I arrived at the embassy, I was introduced to William Barr, Mike Harari, and Buddy Young. I had met Mr. Young 1 year prior in Little Rock, Arkansas. Mr. Barr represented himself as an emissary of Vice President Bush, who would be arriving in the very near future. This was an advance party to set up meetings for Vice President Bush. We joined the cocktail party, and then accommodations were arranged at a local hotel. I was then asked to join Mr. Barr, Mr. Young, and Mr. Harari at a local German restaurant. I was picked up by the embassy car. Major Felix Rodriguez was in the car when I entered. We met the others for dinner and continued the meeting at the hotel. I was told that Mr. Young and Mr. Harari would fly back to Pomerola with me in the morning. We departed the following morning with the passengers listed on Item 19, Remarks section of the DOD flight plan dated 16 March 1985. The following conversation took place between Messrs. Harari and Young during the flight to Pomerola Air Base. The passengers were wearing headsets and speaking over the aircraft intercom due to the high noise level in the helicopter. As the command pilot, I routinely monitored all conversations on our intercom. I did not advise our passengers that I was listening, nor that I was recording their conversation. Buddy Young. Arkansas has the capability to manufacture anything in the area of weapons, and if we don't have it, we'll get it. Mike Harari. How about government controls? Buddy. The governor's on top of it. If the feds get nosy, we hear about it and make a call. Then they're called off. He was looking around the countryside and continued, why the hell would anyone want to fight for a shithole like this? Harari, shaking his head in awe, answered, what we do has nothing to do with preserving a country's integrity. It's just business. And third world countries see their destiny as defeating borders and expanding. The more of this mentality we can produce, the greater our wealth. We train and we arm. That's our job. And in return, we get a product far more valuable than the money for a gun. We're paid with product, and we credit top dollar for the product. Look, one gun and 3,000 rounds of ammo is $1,200. A kilo of product is about $1,000. We credit the Contras $1,500 for every kilo. That's top dollar for a kilo of cocaine in South America. It's equivalent to the American Kmart special buy, you know, buy four, get one free. On our side, we spend $1,200 for a kilo and sell it for $12,000 to $15,000. Now that's a profit center, and the market is much greater for the product than for weapons. It's just good business, buddy. Buddy Young. Damn! So you guys promote wars and revolutions to provide weapons for drugs. We provide the non-numbered parts to change out, and we all win. Damn, that's good. Harari. It's good when it works, but someone is, how do you say, has his hand in the till. Buddy responding on the defensive. Well, we get our 10% right off the top, and that's plenty. Goofus can make it go a long way. Harari. Who is Goofus? Buddy. Governor Clinton. That's our pet word for him. You know, they call the president POTUS for President of the United States. Well, we call Clinton Goofus for Governor of the United States. He thinks he is, anyhow. Harari. That's your problem in America. You have no respect for your elected officials. They are more powerful than you think and have ears everywhere. You should heed my words and be loyal to your leaders. Especially when speaking to persons like me, your remarks indicate a weakness, something our intelligence analysts look for. Buddy. Hell, Mike. Everybody knows the Clintons want the White House and will do anything to get it. That's why I'm here instead of someone else. We know about the cocaine. Hell, I picked it up before with Lassiter when he was worried about going on to Little Rock Air Base to go get it. I did. A new line of conversation ensued. Harari questioned Young about his knowledge of who the players were. Here's a synopsis of the players according to Young. Buddy said, Clinton thinks he's in charge, but he'll only go as far as Casey allows. Me and my staff, we keep the lid on things. You know, complaints about night flying. Arkansas people are private folks. They don't like a lot of commotion. And MENA just isn't the right place for the operation. It keeps us busy at shredding, if you know what I mean. Dan the man, speaking of Dan Lassiter, he does magic with the money between him and Jack Stevens. We don't have to worry a bit. Then we got Parks. If there's a problem, he's the man. We call him the Archer. That's the code name that Casey and Colby told us to assign to that position. Venice oversees our drop zone. Nash, he's just the boss's yes man. Personally, I think he's a mistake. Seal and his guys, I like his attitude. And leave the driving to us, he said, quoting one of Seal's good old boy's sayings. Harari, you like Seal? Buddy, hell, he's the only one I trust. I respect his word. Harari, do you see much of him? Buddy, hell yeah. We test drive Clinton's rides before we send him on. You know what I mean? He laughed, grinding his hips. Say, how much coke do you reckon we can make in a week? Harari, one camp can produce 400 keys a week. The others are about half that, but that's just one source. We have many others. Buddy, what? Oh, the governor wanted to know our capacity. Mike, who else is on the team? Well, hell, I forgot who I told you about. Mike ran down the list from memory. Okay, there's the manufacturers. Hell, these two. The tape stopped. I didn't recognize the names. I ran out of paper on my kneeboard shortly after the tape stopped. Something like Johnson & Johnson. The flight continued, and so did their discussions, about people mostly. We landed. I went to the operations and made a note on the back of the flight plan that I had filed by phone. 18 March 1985, I was called at 0500 hours and told that there were three wounded soldiers at a Contra camp outside of Choluteca. We launched and picked up two observers in Choluteca, as ordered. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North and Lieutenant Colonel Ramon Navarro. And that surprise visit we continue in the next chapter of the Tatum Chronicles. Stay tuned. More to come. You can get your copy of the Tatum Chronicles at thebookpatch.com. www.thebookpatch.com.